Blog Talk Radio.
No. Gentlemen, welcome to the backyard. That was Mr. Kevin MacLeod getting us in the mood with his classic reggae. I hope you're taking a minute to take a deep breath, because in Jamaica we say no problem, man. When you're in the backyard, it's time to relax. So forget about the cares of the week. Forget about the fact that we're almost in the middle of the year. This is the fifth month that we have been in for the last week, and I can't believe that next month, half of the year will be gone. So if you're still working on your New Year's resolution, you know what I mean, forget about it, because it's time to relax. And we're going to have some very interesting labrish tonight about the good old days in Jamaica when education was the most important aspect of young people's lives. So I am happy to welcome all my callers on the board and those who may be listening online. And if you are on my list, you perhaps haven't some idea of who we're going to be discussing. Three very brilliant men. I call them brilliant because they lived over 100 years ago. These were all men of color who did some fantastic things for our island and culture almost 100 years ago. Well, definitely 100 years ago. So as usual, I'm always excited to put a voice to the work of some of our historians. And tonight I am featuring one of my favorite ones, who's Dr. Lumsden, because of the period that she is bringing to life. And this is a period where there was a lot of good things doing by average. They would be considered average in those days, because they were not making news in the newspaper. They were not members of governments. They were members of the society, however, who really contributed a lot. And because we all know as seniors how important education is to young people, I just find these stories rather interesting, and I hope you will enjoy them along with me. So the first person I'm going to talk about is a man who actually wrote about himself. And considering when he was born, I think it's very remarkable. So let's start with Matthew Joseph. And I must apologize. I'm going to go in and change it. I really misspelled his name on the promo and I think on the website too. But his name is spelled M-A-T-H-E-W-J-O-S-E-P-H. He was born a slave on the 25th of October in 1831 on a coffee plantation in Rose Hill in the Blue Mountains. I don't know if the okay. His grandfather was an Igbo, E-B-O-E prince. He had been brought to Jamaica as a slave about 1780 and died 2 years after emancipation. His father, who had been taught to read by a bookkeeper on the plantation where he was a headman, taught Matthew and his brother to read. He was very determined that they should be educated. After the end of apprenticeship from about 1839 to 1847, Matthew attended the Church Missionary Society School at Woodford, W-O-D-F-O-R-D. Sidebar, I'm doing all the spelling, so I'm hoping that somewhere in the world of Jamaican seniors, some of these names may ring a bell, and I'm highlighting Dr. Lumsden's material tonight, and she's always seeking, you know, additional information about the people she write about. So back to the article. The school at Woodford was 2 miles from where he lived. Then he was fortunate enough to gain a place to be trained as a teacher at the Government Normal School, which had recently been established near Spanish Town. Now, remember, folks, we're talking about way back when. 18 months later, in July of 1849, he was called to take charge of Woodford School when the teacher's position became vacant. 7 years later, in September of 1856, he was appointed to the head teacher's post at the church school, Trinity Village, Blue Mountain Valley, in St. Thomas. He later taught in various other schools, including one in Chapelton, and the reformatory school in Stony Hill, being a teacher for over 40 years. Well, I'm going to take a minute from this article to tell you, I can remember my great-grand-aunt, who was also a teacher at the Stony Hill Reformatory School. So when I'm reading this for the first time, too, I mean, my eyes are getting bigger. Okay, so Matthew Joseph was actually in Port Morant at the time of the rebellion, but had no sympathy for the rebels. He undertook the sad duty of giving spiritual comfort to some from the areas who were executed. He gave evidence on the event of 1865 before the Royal Commission, which came to Jamaica in 1866 to investigate those events. He also gave evidence about conditions in Jamaica before the West India Royal Commission in 1897. Now, remember, folks, this was a very black man, and he was doing all of this, plus he was a teacher, you know, for a long time. Okay, from the 1860s, he was writing and publishing poetry locally in a conventional Victorian style. In 1876, he virtually bankrupted himself by going to London to publish a book of poetry called the wonders of creation. The Reverend Robert Gordon, a well-known Jamaican black Anglican clergyman then living in England, wrote an introduction to the work, but it failed to sell well, and Joseph lost his money. Now, sidebar again, I find that so intriguing that in 1876, you had a black Jamaican in England trying to sell a book he wrote. Think about it, folks. I mean, that is so fascinating. Needless to say, you know, there are people then of the now generation who are making up stories about all the things that couldn't be done during the days of colonialism. Here's my point. The people who really wanted to do it found a way. And here again, I find that, as I always say on the show, you know, so much has changed over the centuries and so much has remained the same. Because even now as we speak, in certain cultures, a lot of people are living in serious poverty, and some of them in slavery, slaves to other people. And those who are really passionate about finding a change, we have stories all the time of special people appearing on different shows now who were in situations that seem so hopeless, yet they found a way to realize their dreams. So I am just thinking how far back this goes back. You know, humans are humans no matter what culture they're from, and no matter what circumstances they're really exposed to. So I'm really getting inspired tonight as I read about these people of 100 years ago. And, you know, it always gives me so much inspiration and joy to discover these things. I'm just like a kid again. So let me go back to the article, because I have a lot to cover tonight. And incidentally, I'd like to also ask the listeners on the line, and just hit one when you want to interrupt me, because I love it. Or I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, you know, be part of the labrish, which that's what we're here for you to participate. So I'm back to Dr. Lumsden's article. That was her, I suppose, assessment of what she found. I also will be reading some things from the newspaper that, you know, they say about each one of these men. We're discussing three of them tonight, excuse me, who were all educators from way back then. Okay, back to the article. In the early 1800s, Matthew Joseph was involved in the movement to restore representative government in Jamaica. And in 1884, was the spokesman for a schoolmasters association campaigning for reforms in the education system. In 1888, he was elected at the top of the poll to represent Stony Hill on the St. Andrew Parochial Board. He remained a member of the board until he suffered the stroke, which led to his death in October 1901. He had lived long enough to see his son called to the bar at the Middle Temple in London and returned to Jamaica in 1899 to practice as a barrister. So here is a man born in slavery. He was son of a very prominent African man who was already educated when he was sold into slavery by his own people or his enemies, who was perhaps holding him as a prisoner of war, so he was expendable. And he comes along with, you know, other slaves who might not have been educated at all, but he was educated enough to educate his children. I mean, this is, to me, news breaking. All right. Now, I never know if listeners on the board are familiar with some of these stories, and I'm always curious to know if I'm the one that, among the few that's been in the dark all my life. Excuse me, I'm having a little nasal problem that sort of seemed to settle in my throat. So do bear with me, because remember, I'm an amateur trying to do my thing with all this excitement that is building up with me, because we're here each Thursday in the backyard to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. So I'm getting back to the article, where he was born. Now, what Dr. Lumsden has done is she's, you know, sort of, as I said, wrote a little essay about his life and all of that. Then she goes and she finds articles, or she wrote what she writes from real articles. Then she posts the articles themselves. So there are copies that was taken from the Daily Gleaner or some church report or something, but they're all authentic. She has the page number where they're found, the document they were found in. So I will just read to you some of the I am always intrigued at the way the reporters of 100 years ago described people and things and events. So I don't know if there are any wordsmiths like me that are passionate about words that will find this interesting, but I would like to read it for you as it was written. And sometimes that's difficult. Where he was born. Now, this is his autobiography, I suppose. The island of Jamaica has been at all times provincial for its beautiful scenery, especially towards its eastern side. A voyager for the first time approaching this part of the island cannot but be delighted with its green valleys and romantic glades, G-L-A-D-E-S, and with the cloud-capped peaks of the Blue Mountains in the distance. Sailing southward from Morant Point, the seaport of Port Morant, Morant Bay, and Yalas Bay will successfully be passed. On reaching Plum Point, Kingston, the capital of the island, will appear in view, then will also be seen at a distance and at an elevation of 4,000 feet above the level of the sea. The cantonment, C-A-N-T-O-N-M-E-N-T, of Newcastle, the only military station in the island in which white troops are kept. Beyond a ridge of hills on the western side of Newcastle is a broad and beautiful valley containing coffee plantations. On one of these, called Rose Hill, I was born on the 25th of October, 1931. Ancestry and childhood. This is how he wrote it. I'm reading it exactly as he wrote it. My father was the eldest son of A-G-U-L-L-I-O-N, Algoyon, I suppose, a prince of one of the Ibu tribes, inhabiting a tract of country nearly bordering on the Gulf of Guinea, who, as he told my father, had been a general in his own land before he was stolen from hence, which was about the year 1780, and brought over this vast Atlantic with many others of his countrymen and countrywomen, and sold as slaves on a plantation in the valley above mentioned. reflecting often on the high position he had occupied in his native country, he bore the iron yoke of slavery with much uneasiness, and from the turbulent spirit he frequently exhibited, he was always considered by his owner as a dangerous slave. He died at an advanced age, 2 years after emancipation. My father's mother, from whom I received some information respecting the customs and manners of her country, Dahomey, lived much longer. Of my maternal grandparents, as they had died before I was born, I know comparatively nothing. And that was written by this gentleman himself. That's not somebody writing about him. Oh, man, I'm getting the chills. So it goes on to say, during the period of my childhood, there were no schools in the country districts to which the children of the people of my race could be sent to receive the elements of useful training. But my father, having been taught to read by a kind bookkeeper on the plantation on which he was henman, endeavored to teach my brothers and myself to read. Books were then scarce. Fennings, F-E-N-N-I-N-G-S, and Dilworth's spelling books were then by us taught of the highest excellence. After making some progress in these, I was considered by my kind-hearted father so good a scholar that he thought me fit to read the New Testament and an old edition of Gautier's Geography. These were for a long time my whole stock of school books. For 4 years, from 1835 to 1835, my teacher was my beloved father. My school books, those above mentioned, and my school, some shady tree in my father's field, under which I sat, learning the lesson he appointed me, to be repeated to him whenever he could conveniently attend to me. It will at once be seen that at such a school and by such a mode of tuition, I could make but little progress in learning. Still, I must own that I derived much benefit therefrom. For having been so early thrown, T-H-R-O-W-N, as it were, on my own resources, I then acquired that taste for reading and a habit of reflecting on whatever I read, which have always been of the greatest service to me in endeavoring always to improve my mind. In the year 1839, the Church Missionary Society established a mission and school at Woodford, 2 miles distance from my native place. The school I attended for about a year. On my father leaving that part of the parish to settle in another district, I was taken along with him. And as there were no schools near our new home to which I could be sent, he restored to his old plan of teaching me himself. Finding that by that way I was making no progress, he sent me to remain with a relative residing near Woodford. by which means I was again enabled to attend that school. And when I received such little instruction as were then given in the country, schools generally. As my attendance at school was irregular, having been absent therefrom at times for 6 months together, although I had a thirst for learning, my progress was not satisfactory. In the year 1847, having by some answers in geography attracted the attention of the Reverend W. Rowe, spelled R-O-W-E, then curate of Woodford, he promised my father to recommend the Board of Education to send me to the Government Normal School, then recently established near Spanish Town, to be trained as a teacher. On the 14th of February of the following year, I was admitted as a student into the institution in which I remained, however, but 18 months, having been sent for by Mr. Rowe to take charge of Woodford School, on the mastership of it becoming vacant in July of 1849. Now, his next headline was The Teacher. After laboring at Woodford for 7 years, in September of 1856, I obtained the more important situation of the mastership of the church school, Trinity Vale, Blue Mountain Valley, under the management of the Reverend W. Stern. It was while residing in this place where nature is seen in all her loveliness and sublimity that I felt a desire to express in verse the thoughts I had always, from my childhood, so strongly entertained of nature, of God's nature, and of the cruel wrongs inflicted on my race. In 1862, I published The Slave and Mirror and Minor Poems, and 2 years after, Time and Eternity. These little publications have met with much success. I have been induced and advised to collect all my principal poetic writings and publish them in a single volume. Isn't that amazing, ladies and gentlemen? And we never ever read one of this man's poems or even heard about him. Man, I just love Dr. Lumsden. Listen to this. I'm going on. I'm getting very excited here, ladies and gentlemen, as you can hear. I can hardly even see the page. Okay, I'm back on the on his writing. Although conscious of many shortcomings, I may be pardoned in saying that I look back with some degree of satisfaction on the 25 years I have spent in endeavoring to instruct in useful learning hundreds of the rising generation of my native land. And I have further the pleasing satisfaction in knowing that, by divine aid, many of those who in years past were under my tuition have now become useful, intelligent, and respectable members of society. And that was all she had on his personal writing, I think. But I am opening up the board now because I need to take a break. But I have just been in awe of all this material. And I'd like to ask if anyone on the board has any comment or, you know, anything to say about this awesome man. I just think it's unbelievable. And, you know, these are the praises we need to be singing of people of old times who, even though they were struggling and things were so hard, they broke through, you know. And we have young people now who may think that they're having a hard time, you know, getting to school or trying to learn. But I also want to give a shout out to teachers to look back at the dedication that people of the past had in inspiring young people and how they felt about themselves when they know they were doing a good job, even if they didn't have the tools. You know, look at this man expressing in his own words how he felt about passing on what he had learned. Another thing is how diligent his father was in making sure that he imparted, you know, what he had learned to him. And, you know, people, not only the teachers, but the parents have a responsibility to be really involved in their children's education. So I just want to sort of build on this, because I always like to, we're about the past, but I always like to connect it to the present and with hope for the future, because as it seems like societies all over the world seem to be paying less attention to basic and true education and more to socializing of everything. You know what I mean? People are more into things instead of knowledge. And if we take a look back in history, especially countries that have come so far, as we're about to celebrate, you know, our 50th independence, we need to look back at some of these really pioneers who in 18-something was really pioneering in education for all races. This man was very passionate about his race. So I just wanted to throw that in. So let me tell you a little bit more. I don't know if I'm going to have time to talk about all three men, because that was real some solid information that I wanted to share. I think he's the only person so far that I've seen that she has who wrote, you know, about himself, which brings up another item for me about people in the seniors in the diaspora writing their own stories. And this way, you know, 50 years from now, you know, your children or your great-grandchildren can read your story. Because I just want to know if there might be any siblings from this man's generation, and if they have access or if they know that this man did so much and wrote so much about himself. So I must ask listeners who may come by later after the show closes that if they know anyone with that name, they might want to ask them to check it out and go to the website, go to Dr. Joy Lumsdead's website and check it out. You know, all the information is there. I see we have a hand raised, so I'm going to open up the mic in a minute and welcome the listener to the backyard. Good evening. You got Margaret in the backyard, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve Jamaica. Who do I have?
Hi, Margaret. It's just me, Janine from Long Island.
Oh, welcome. Not just you. You are a loyal fan from
Long Island.
Oh, welcome. Yes. Welcome to the backyard.
I'm okay.
Great.
Just want to say that's another good one you're bringing up here.
Oh, I mean, I am so animated when I hear these fascinating stories. Because, you know, I don't know if I was under a rock someplace.
Me too.
I don't remember hearing any of these stories.
No.
Not a one.
No, I didn't.
And I wonder if the teachers' union or if they have any really documentation on some of these people. I'm just wondering.
I am sure they must have known about these people. They just didn't see the necessity of letting us know about them or what. I don't know.
Yeah, well, there was not a lot of emphasis on local or, I would say, the island's history. There was more, it had to do with politics and, in the general, this came and all of that historic stuff.
And European history and all that. They didn't tell us about our people that achieved, you know.
Right. But and Dr. Lobson is just trying to sort of piece it together. Which is a very tedious job when you're trying to be authentic, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And talk about the right things, give accurate information,
right,
is really what I'd say. But he wrote several poems, you know, and published a book with his picture on it. I mean, this man was really, really neat, innovative, and very passionate about life.
Yes,
and leaving a legacy. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
In doing what he did, you know, he almost lost everything by going to get this book published. But that's how he left a legacy.
Yes.
And my point right now is that his legacy is not really being celebrated at the level that it should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't even know if this book is still in publication. I'll have to check that to see if it's anywhere, if anybody's, you know, picking up the flag or something.
Yes.
But I am just very, very fascinated about all this information. So thank you for coming on and, helping to recognize this very wonderful man. I'm sure there's some of his descendants someplace.
Yes.
His name is spelled M-A-T-T-H-E-W. The last name is spelled J-O-S-E-P-H-S, Joseph.
Oh.
Someone wrote here that they met him in Kingston, and his form still lives in my memory. Matthew Joseph was born, and they talk about, at Rose Hill, October 1831, of slave parents, and was taught by his father to read the New Testament in spite of many difficult, inseparable from the system of slavery. Subsequently, he was sent to Woodford School, and hence the government school at Spanishtown in 1848. He took charge of Woodford School in 1849. I never heard of Woodford before.
No, nobody
knows. There's no information about it.
And where was it located?
In Spanish Town. Dr. Lumsden would have, mentioned it, the school itself. Yeah. I really don't know. She has wonderful pictures on our website, and some of them are just drawings of these people. You can actually see them.
Wow.
And I am going to be eventually putting them on my website, too. Technically, I'm having a little difficulty, but we're going to be working so that after the show, people can go see the pictures. If you're watching online, if someone is listening online, there should be a flash going because I was able to upload some pictures from that period on the Blog Talk website. So you should be seeing what he looks like. But they went on to say that he published the Slave in 1862, and Time and Eternity was published in 1864.
Mm.
He was for some time master of the Chapelton School in Clarendon, and he was encouraged by friends and well-wishers. He collected all his writings into a book form and visited England for the purpose of arranging business with his publishers. The preface was written by the Reverend Robert Gordon, for some time master of the Woolmer's Grammar School, then residing in England. So Woolmer's Grammar School must be a school in England, I don't know. His longest poem was The Wonder of Creation. Mr. Joseph took an interest in home politics and was for some time member of the parochial board of St. Andrew. It is to be hoped that at the conference of the JUT for 1902, the executive will pass a resolution in connection with his death. Although he is only a Jamaican, he merits it, being one of those of whom we may be justly proud. Think not a strife, though it small appear. Small sands make it all mountains. Moments make the years, and trifles life. The life of Joseph certainly extend inspiring. True, he is no genius, yet still, if we look at the obstacles he had to overcome to attain the position he secured, he is nothing if not extraordinary. And yet, there are few, a dwindling few, thank heavens, who speak of the inherent inability of a Negro race. I am always quick to recognize worth and worship the man and hero, but if ever there can be a brighter glow in my breast, it is when I contemplate the success, however small, of one belonging to the African race. And that article was written by young liberal Jamaican Times of 1901. It's on page 2, column 2. So that's what I am talking about, how Dr. Lumsden verifies or authenticate her findings when she's putting together something.
Right.
So you can imagine the search that she goes through to find any article that was ever published about this man.
Yeah.
To find it and put, you know, all the pieces
together. Yeah.
I just want to give a shout out to her and tell her that I am sure Backyard Labrish and all its fans will be forever grateful for her work and dedication, because it's really, really lighting my fire. And I am always so inspired when I read of these ancient people who, and all the obstacles they had to overcome to live their passion.
That's true.
And, you know, if we're ever feeling down or want to complain about an obstacle, we need to, you know, you need to send people that might be thinking that way to listen to this program and listen about these great people of 100 years ago that we know so little about.
Yeah.
So I really, really want to celebrate them. So now I'm going to talk about somebody else. And there are several poems. One of these days I'm going to have some of the poems that Dr. Lumsden has collected on my website. So after I talk, and I'm planning to start a blog that people can respond to online. And, you know, if they want to go check the poems out. Because we need to have the younger generation more aware. We were not aware because, you know, at the time it was not being taught in our history classes.
Right.
But now that these things have been discovered, I don't know what the situation is in Jamaica, if they're including any of this wonderful material. But for us who may have some connection with a younger generation, we really need to be exposing them to it. So with that said, we are celebrating all three native educators tonight. So I want to move on to the next one, who is Thomas Bruchel Stevenson. And it's Bruchell is his middle name, and his last name is spelled Stephenson. So if any of his descendants are out there or come by later, we're talking about your
relative.
Upline, someone perhaps that you don't even know you're related to. So let's go. He was born in 1845 in Bethel Town. I know Bethel Town, Westmoreland. Into a family who were loyal and devout members of the Baptist Church. And he was named after one of the great Baptist missionaries who had been in the heart of the struggle of emancipation. Without ever attending a teacher training college, he became a teacher by the age of 20, having post in St. Elizabeth, connected to the Calabar College, which was then on East Queen Street, adjacent to the Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
He remained at the Calabar School for the 26 subsequent years of his working life, giving their early training to hundreds who became useful citizens in the island and abroad. Mr. Stevenson was a deacon and the treasurer of the East Queen Street Church for over 25 years. He had an excellent voice and was for many years choir master, training an outstanding choir. He was a trustee of the church for 20 years, superintendent of the Sunday school. He and his wife, just around the corner from the church, lived. At number 2 Sutton Street. Oh, my. Oh, I don't want to say this on here. This is
number
unbelievable.
Number 2 Sutton Street.
Do you know that a great uncle of mine owned that property at number 2 Sutton Street, and I went to school across at East Queen Street Baptist School. I can't believe this. My God. So the first person who lived there, I know that house.
Oh, gosh.
The first person who apparently owned it was the Stevensons. He was a Tate. Oh, my gosh. I don't believe it. Anyway, I'm getting the chills. So, you know, I know that there are some of these people's siblings.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps all over the world.
Yeah.
Perhaps Jamaica. So I am hoping that the listeners who come by will listen for these names I'm spelling and just tell people to get curious and check it out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm back to the article here. He was an ardent supporter of the Baptist Missionary Society and at various times a member of the managing committee, business manager, and auditor for the society's monthly reporter. He was a founding member of the Jamaica Union of Teachers and was twice elected president.
Mm.
He was a member of the Board of Education for 3 years and in the last year of his life was on the Board of Trustees of the Woolmer School. After his retirement in 1909, he stood successfully for election to the Kingston City Council and was later elected for a second term. Alexander Dixon, who served on the council with him, said he was a man who lived to satisfy all classes of the community.
Sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
His obituary in the Gleaner described him as an honest, straightforward, and unassuming man. At the time of his death, after a brief illness in July of 1913, he was remembered for his hard and successful work as a teacher, his integrity and dignity, and the high esteem in which he was held by all classes of the community. His funeral at the East Queen Street Baptist Church and the Maypen Cemetery was one of the largest the island had seen for many years. As a former student wrote, He was one of the pioneers in the cause of education for the people. Now, that man is buried in Maypin.
Well,
I wonder if he even have a headstone.
I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sure all
of these great people are forgotten. How sad.
You know what
really fueled me here now, and I don't want to get political, and I promise that I won't, or even religious. But, you know, there's so much talk now in the Now Jamaica with the bloggers and the blah, 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 about the fact that there was so much difference between the colors in Jamaica. And if you see the pictures of these people, you will know they were of pure African descent. And here they're talking about these people being elected as school principals, being serving on city councils, and we're talking about 18-something.
Hmm.
So I don't know where a lot of these people are getting their information from. And it would be good if, you know, they would broaden their horizon and look more, because I think in my day, it was who was educated and able to do the job, regardless of the whatever color you were. I don't know what is happening now, but in my day, that's the way it was. So now it's proof that it happened long before my day, because my mother was born 1912, right? And this man died 1913. My mother was only 1 year old when this man died. And he was a prominent member of both the government side and the educational side.
Right.
So, you know, that's just a sidebar. Because I really, really I'm so grateful that some of this information is now become available to us. And I just hope that the fan base will help to spread the word, that people can get some authentic information of how things were. This is almost 200 years ago. My mother would have been 100 years this year.
Yeah.
And she was one when he died.
Died.
You know what I mean? So there's information out there, authentic information, if you try to find it. And I think people need to not make up their own stories based on their political agenda or, you know, what they just see. But or the period they were born in, because I know things have changed so much all over the world.
Right.
But you need to go back and find some authentic information before you even write articles or form your own opinion.
That's
you know, get
true.
Some other input from other places.
Right.
And I am not taking any sides. I'm just dealing with the facts, because I read a lot of what's going on, what's being posted and all of that now, and there seem to be the air or the feeling that things were so terrible, you know, in the period I grew up in Jamaica, and I was not really aware of it. It may have been so, but really, I consider myself having the best of both worlds, because I think I had a wonderful upbringing in Jamaica, and I'm so grateful I was born and raised there. And I came to the United States in the days of Camelot, you know, late 50s, well, for the Northerners, it were, because I came to New York in 1959, and it was absolutely beautiful. I, you know, went to school, got my education, didn't have any problems getting a job, you know, started my family, and life was good. Life was good. So I am really considering myself very blessed.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I'm doing this show is to talk about some things from the past that can encourage the seniors, really, as well as the younger generation. You know, that there's always beauty in, you can find beauty in every period. And although, we as seniors might be looking at certain things now and not agreeing with it. We always have to remember that in our days there were things that we didn't think were cool that the old people, you know, was objecting to. We thought it was cool, but they didn't. So, you know, it's just a process. It's just a process. And we need to become more comfortable with where we are and who we are and just celebrate instead of try to criticize or, you know, tear down or give up. You know, a lot of seniors are giving up on the young folks and thinking they don't want to learn and they don't want to know. But I don't think we can get to that stage. You know, we really always have to do, we have so much to offer as seniors.
Yeah.
That we just have to continue when we don't think they're listening, they are.
Exactly.
So let me go back to what was written about this wonderful gentleman. And I get so off in my sidebar sometimes that I lose places. But I have to keep reminding my listeners that I'm just a novice who's just having fun here, and we're very relaxed in the backyard. We're not professionals, and this is not CNN or, you know, white paper or NBC 2020 or anything like that. I'm just putting a voice to the historian's documentation, and then I just try to make it fun and relaxed.
Right.
Sometimes I can't even read the paper. But, you know, I make up my own little story about the period.
Right.
But when I tell you I'm back on their papers, I'm reading from their, what they have online.
Right.
And you can always go, if you go to, just Google Dr. Joy Lumsden's name or Backyard Labrish, you will get to this material.
Yes.
So please check it out. So let me go back to, who was I reading about?
Stevenson.
Oh, Mr. Stevenson. Let me see if I can find a place to start. So it has several names here. He felt honored on being given the opportunity to preside at the meeting of the text of the so the text of the address was. Mr. K. Phillips then read, oh, they had special memorial services for him. So this is what the Gleaner reports were about. So Dr. Lumsden has them on the website. And it's always good not to just read about the men, but to think how his peers, to read how his peers felt about him.
Right.
Because, you know, we don't know sometimes what our friends and neighbors and the people we interact with, how they feel about us.
Yes.
And a lot of times after we'd love to know before we go, wouldn't we?
Yes, for sure.
Passed away. So as I read these things about what people say about these men after they have passed away, I wondered how much people had told them while they were alive, you know, what they thought about them. And then I say, now here's a good time for me to encourage listeners to tell people what you think about them, especially if you believe that they're doing something that is contributing to the betterment of their neighborhood, their family, themselves, you, or whoever. Let them know. Let them know. Don't wait until after they're gone, especially the seniors. And if you're a little embarrassed or shy to discuss it with them personally, write them a note, write them a letter, slip it in their pocket when you visit with them. Or if they're on the email like me, send it to them in an email.
Yes.
Tell them how you feel about them.
Yes.
So, okay, let me get back to the documentation here, Margaret. Stay on point. Get with the program. Well, I'm doing all of this because I seem to have lost my place. So let me start here. The Honorable Capra, and I'm calling out names because all these people lived in that period, and I think that I don't know how much their ancestors might know about them.
Yes.
And it's good to know the people who were involved with making comments about educators and things like that.
So here we have a Mr. Pratt, a Mr. James, Young, Walcott, Stewart, Phillips, another Stewart, in a very able speech, introduced the governor, who expressed the pleasure it gave him to be present, and congratulated Mr. Stephen. He was still alive then. This was some award he was giving him. Oh. Now, remember in that day, you remember the years we're talking about. And
yes.
The governor, who I'm sure was English,
yes.
was there to, he was expressing his pleasure that it
yes.
gave him to be present
yes.
and congratulated Mr. Stephen on his excellent work he had done in the course of education.
Oh.
Schoolmaster said his excellency were like schoolmasters, said His Excellency, were like missionaries. They labored not for what it brought them, but they worked for the sake of the work. Men like Mr. Stevenson were content because of the deeds that followed them. Their spirits were attuned not so much to obtaining worthy goods, but to the uplifting of their race. He felt honored on being given the opportunity to preside at the meeting. Now, the text of the address. Mr. K. Phillips then read the address as follows. Mr. Walcott, at the same time, handing Mr. Stevens the purse. Oh, they had collected a purse for him because he was retiring.
Oh,
Dear Mr. Stevenson, hold on. Now that you have retired from active life as an elementary schoolmaster, we desire to express our high appreciation of the invaluable service you have rendered our country in that capacity. You have spent 46 years of your life in the schoolroom, during which you have, by indomitable pluck, energy, perseverance and determination, proved yourself one of our most successful teachers. In the course of your professional career, over 10,000 pupils have come under your tuition, 8,000 of whom in the city of Kingston, and here we gladly bear grateful testimony to the effect your training has had upon us. Not only have you sought to equip us intellectually for our life's work, but realizing the true ideal of a teacher and the dignity and importance of the office as a prominent factor in the making of a people. One of the characteristic features of your training has been your constant endeavor to inspire us with a true sense of justice,
right.
an honesty of purpose, and all that makes for true manliness and good citizenship.
Whoa.
Just a minute. I missed my place again. To inspire us. Hold on. Glasses is not acting up on me. Hold, just give me a minute, ladies and gentlemen, while I readjust my sight here. The print on this is very bad, so it's giving me a little problem to read. Hold on, don't go away. These people were so eloquent in their deliverance in the English language.
Rich. Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. Making of a people of a character and okay, citizenship does. Okay. The impress of your noble justice and honesty of purpose and all that makes for true manliness and good citizenship. Okay, I read that. Justice, oh gosh. I am sorry, I'm going to have to continue with this next week. Because my eyes, all of a sudden, are not working too well. And, you know, I have an eye challenge. So once my glasses get out of focus, it's hard for me to sort of readjust, and the print is rather small. So, ladies, I'm going to put some music, and gentlemen, I'm going to put some music on and take a short break. I see 914-665 hands up. I'm going to open the mic and have you just talk to the other guests for a minute while I go get my eye drops. So take a minute. Your mic is open, 914-665. Welcome to the backyard. Who do I have? This is Margaret.
This is Carl.
Hi, Carl. Welcome to the backyard. Where are you calling us from?
From Mount Vernon.
Oh, great. Now, well, I got to take a break to talk to my other guests. Let me go get some eye drops.
Oh, okay, fine.
Hi, Carl. How are you?
Hi. No, Margaret.
Janine.
Jean. Yeah, hi, Jean. How are you doing? Janine.
Yes. Janine.
Janine, yes, yes. I plan to be in touch also. But
yes.
Anyway, Margaret mentioned about this funeral, this wonderful funeral that they had for Mr. Stevenson.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he was buried in Maypin Cemetery. And I recall as a young man, whenever I had the sad occasion to go into Maypin to attend a funeral, that I always wandered away from my party, the group who was being buried, and wondered about those gravestones and the names and the dates that I could see. As I was always curious about who these people were.
Yes.
And I recall, well, I've been to Jamaica, back to Jamaica in quite a few, maybe 15, 20 years.
Yes.
But I recall that my visits, say 15 to 20 years ago, that Maypin Cemetery was not very well maintained.
No.
And I also believe that that there is so much history
there.
Mm-hmm. And if any research had to be done, all research I had to do is wonder through the cemetery, and they'd be surprised to know the information which they could glean in the cemetery.
But I'm wondering if they could get all that information now, because as you said before, the cemetery is not well kept, and it's not even a safe cemetery to go to now.
Yes.
Where they are not doing any burials there, and they were destroying a lot of the tombstones.
Yeah, this is what I heard. There's a lot of vandalism. It's really unfortunate because it's a big part of our history.
Yes.
And it is really sad because it was our best and biggest cemetery in Kingston, at least.
Yes, it's on the Catholic cemetery.
Yeah,
Both. You can't even, if you have like family members buried in those cemeteries, you can't even go to pay a visit anymore.
Because it's not safe.
It's not safe.
Mm.
So a lot of activity is not really happening where people are going there anymore, which is really sad because there are histories there.
And it's
folks, I'm back. Thanks for holding the fort for me,
and
I'm going to try to get back to the documentation. But I agree with you, you know, that we have to do more in preserving our history. And incidentally, as we're talking about preservation, there was a recent article, because, you know, I do surf the local articles as much as I can, about some woman in Jamaica who had been at the forefront of trying to restore the Ward Theater. I think she had passed away or something like that. So there was an article about that. But, you know, that is in terrible disrepair and possibly will be demolished or something, you know, because it's like it's a wreck. So she was trying to get something action going about having it restored because it's perhaps one of the last historic buildings in the area of downtown Kingston, because the one that they mentioned in the article was the hotel that was the Myrtle Bank Hotel. What a magnificent building it was, and it was destroyed. It was demolished. But, you know, preserving. And incidentally, I did a show some time ago on the earthquake, and there were some beautiful memorial monuments in Maypen for the earthquake of 1907 or 1902, somewhere around there. The victims, because they were buried in a mass grave, they were not individual, and there was a lot of collection money collected to build some very impressive, beautiful. There's drawings of them, of the what was put up, and I don't even think that is standing. So there's a lot of important history that should have been preserved that isn't. But we need to perhaps get more awake about what we can do now with what's left. So let me just go back and finish Mr. Stevenson's report before we run out of time. So thanks for holding the fort. So let's get back to where I can read now. Remember, we were reading from his presentation when he retired from his peers, and the governor was there, and it was a big hoopla. So the article goes on to say, and I'm intrigued with the words they use, the impress, I-M-P-R-E-S-S, of your noble justice and honesty of purpose and all that makes the true... the true manliness and good citizenship, it looks like I'm reading it over. I think I read that part already to you. We note with pleasure and pride the positions which some of your pupils occupy, scattered as they are among the various avocations of life, including legal, ministerial, medical, teaching, merchantile, with a large number of artists, and we all look back with gratitude and satisfaction on the time spent under your instruction during the 4 to 6 years as we of your faithful labor. You have evidence there's evidence of your keen interest in the social, moral, and intellectual welfare of our people, and have always taken a leading part in the solution of questions that affect elementary education in this island. Your opinion, based on sound judgment and long practical experience, have always been respected, and only by your brethren, not only by your brethren in the profession, but by others interested in the educational advancement of our country. This is evidence by your having been appointed for 3 consecutive years to serve on the Board of Education and elected president of the Jamaica Union of Teachers on 2 different occasions, and member of the executive of the body from its foundation to present time. These are slight proof of the esteem in which you are held by the community. Without making any insatious distinction with the subscribers of the purse, those responses have been so ready and spontaneous. A few quotations from letters received will give some idea of the general high esteem in which you are held. I shall be happy to attend on the occasion of the presentation of an address to a teacher whom I esteem so highly as I do Mr. Stevenson. Honorable Thomas Caper, C-A-P-E-R, B-A, Superintendent Inspector of Schools. In common with all who know Mr. Stevenson, I have a high opinion of his character and of the value of his work, and I am glad to join in expressing it. Reverend Canon W. Sims, headmaster of the Jamaica College, no teacher has, in my judgment, rendered better service to the cause of education in this island than Mr. Stevenson, and no teacher deserved to be honored more than the Reverend, more than he. So what they had here was what each person said about him. I won't go through reading all of them, but I mean, it just goes on and on and on, and you can see that they collected money, and as one of the speakers said, they gave generously to him, because you can imagine the teachers then, even when they were in charge, headmasters, I don't think they were getting a lot of money.
No, I don't think so.
But as you see from all of this, everybody said they were in it because of the cause, because of the importance of educating children. You know, that was more important than anything else. They had a passion and a drive for leaving hundreds. They were exposed to hundreds of students.
Yeah.
And at that time, education was the most important thing in the society. And that's what I'd love to see return. You know, especially in Jamaica, all over the world, but especially in Jamaica, because I know in my day, education was the most important thing for all levels of the society.
Yeah.
You know, the people who were not privileged to send their, could not economically send their children to high schools and all of that, even if they didn't, that was their most, I think, important thing that they would want to do if they could.
Right.
And a lot of them that were in lowly positions that worked as helpers for people, they sent their children to college. A lot of them, you know, migrated to different parts of the world and became doctors and lawyers. So my point is, it was done then. It was done before our times, before our time, and perhaps before their time. And it still can be done now. It's a matter of making it the important thing.
Yeah, there's no interest.
In every family. You know, so we have to spiritually start claiming that is what we want our people to return to, making educating their children a priority above everything else. And with that, you know, we have a little time left. But I have to take a break from the reading because it's getting so tedious. And the print is really bad. You know, all of that is copied from the original article. And by the time I copy it and print it, it sometimes gets difficult for me to read for such a long time. So I am going to promise to take up, I don't know for anybody else, but I find how people express themselves long ago, the words they used, you know, how they came over. I find it so intriguing that I love reading it because I think it's interesting how they the words they used to describe both how they felt, mm-hmm. you know, and how they presented things. So I don't know if any of the other fans enjoy it, but I ask you to bear with me as I go through the details of what is written. So with that said, Mr. Carl, I really appreciate you being here, and Miss Janine.
You're welcome.
As always. And I am asking everybody to spread the word so that we can have more people learning about these wonderful people. And I am going to be closing out the teachers next week. We have some female teachers that I'm going to speak about next week. And, I mean, they were born in 18-something to untaught then. I mean, just marvelous women. And we have pictures of them. I can't wait for you to be able to go to the website. But I promise you that by next week you'll be able to click on Backyard Labrish and see their faces.
Well, I must give them great credit for their dedication working on the very difficult, well, first their salaries were not high, and they cared about the children and their future.
Right.
And a lot of these students who graduated and became professionals in their various fields, and no matter where in the world they went, they can always go back to those beginnings when they can remember a particular teacher like Mr. Stevenson,
right.
Mm-hmm. who gave them a lot of inspiration and hope and encouragement as to what they can do and will do in their future.
Right.
And I think the profession as a whole does attract people who make a lot of sacrifice to be where they are. And, of course, the atmosphere and the setting, well, let's put it this way, the society was not as hostile as it is today. And as a result, a lot of teachers today are actually retreating
mm-hmm.
from the classroom, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, it's good to remember that our beginnings were really wonderful days and produced some really great leaders.
Yes.
Right.
They should be really given credit for their dedication.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
They really need to be recognized and celebrated.
Yes.
You see,
in those days, the teachers weren't doing it for the money.
No.
It was the love of the profession. And to help the kids, because the teaching was so different, you know. And as you justly said, in those times and our times, we had a lot of respect for teachers.
Oh, yes.
These kids
the
of
parents,
today, now they don't.
And the parents had no hesitation in allowing them to even go as far as to discipline their children. Today, they just can't do it.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. But the background we had in the beginning of education, how they did it gradually in putting everything together, but you remember the start of it when you started school?
Right.
And, you know, you continue. They had a pattern.
Right.
Which they knew how to impart that education into us.
Right.
And in our days, we better sit down and pay attention.
Yes.
And take it in, or you know, you're going home and you're going to get a whipping too.
That's one.
Right.
Well,
let me just share with you a little more about what the governor said. The governor recognizes that there are exceptional circumstances in regard to Mr. Stevenson's distinguished and honorable career as a school teacher, which would make it particularly agreeable to him to preside on the occasion proposed E.T. Scott, private secretary. I regret very much, as an old caliber boy, I cannot be present at such a necessary function. It has been a great pleasure to come under the influence of a man of such marked personal strength of character and honesty of purpose. J.L. King, B.A., Gray, London Inn. In bidding adieu to the profession, we are conscious that it is only the robe of activity in the service that will be laid aside, but the garment of wholehearted zeal and interest in the cause which is dear to our heart will still be worn by you. And while we, F-A-I-N, would think of your departure from the classroom, we joy in the fact that your experience, counsel, and guidance will ever be at our disposal. As a token of our appreciation and recognition of your service to Jamaica, for close upon half a century, and our thankfulness for the example set of an upright, useful life, we would ask you to accept the accompanying purse subscribed by past, present pupils and others who share our high opinion of your work and worth. True
your life reminds us we can make our life sublime and departing leave behind us footprints on the sands of time. May the good shepherd continue to lead you and your dear wife beside the still waters. Only goodness and mercy follow you all the remaining days of your lives. And in your declining days, may you both experience that peace which passeth all understanding. And when you shall have put off the moral coil, may you be welcomed by the great teacher in the heaven of rest.
Amen.
Is the earnest prayer of our grateful, of your grateful pupils.
Beautiful.
The address signed by Kent Noonan Phillips, J. Alexander Stewart, Arthur A. Stevenson, Samuel Gross, G-R-O-S-S, Arthur E. Nicholas, Walton S. Cooper, John Rogers, Samuel Kitchen, and Henry F. Nicholas. On behalf of the others, Mr. Stevenson, in reply, heartily thanked them for all the address they had given him and the souvenir that accompanied it. He joined in the expression of sorrow at Mr. Borrow's death and expressed his deepest sympathy with Mrs. Borrow's, who was a true friend to the elementary school teachers of the island.
Mm.
In thanking the governor for being present, Mr. Stevenson expressed the hope that during His Excellency's administration, with the advice of his executive and an enactment would be passed which would bring into the schools thousands who did not at present enjoy the benefit of going to school. So even at that time, he was advocating for the government to expand education. Isn't that wonderful? I just wanted to make sure I brought that in.
Yes, yes.
That there were advocates. You know, people just don't know all this. You know, that man's grave should be preserved.
Yes.
And his
memory
should be preserved.
Yeah.
You know, we're giving praise to other people who, you know, deserve, don't misunderstand me, but there's so many other people who were the real pioneers of the forward movement of the culture. And I'm bringing all of this to life, hopefully, in the celebration of the 50th year of independence, because it didn't start just 50 years ago.
No.
It started way back from these people's time when they were passionate about doing things for Native people to uplift them and enhance them. You know, so I think they deserve some celebration.
Of course.
And with that said, you know, we are almost out of time, but I'd also like to invite the other callers on the board if they would like to, you know, make a comment. But do remember to spread the word, because I think it's important for generations to listen to this. I really, really think so. Or go research, you know, once it comes up, they can go to the actual website. They might not want to hear all of my babbling and my enthusiasm about all the little sidebars. But my whole purpose is to bring some life.
You're doing a great job, Margaret.
And I'm really passionate about it.
Yes.
And I'm hoping, I know, thank you so much for your appreciation. And, you know, I'm asking for help in spreading the word. So thank you all for being here, those listening online and on the board, and those of you who may come by once we are closed. You know, all the shows are archived, and you can just browse in the browser and find a show that might pique your interest. and you listen to it while you're doing your multitasking, perhaps sending out your emails. And if you find one that you think a friend will like, just copy the URL and send it to them in an email, and they can just click on the show and listen to it. So with that said, my little computer person is telling me I have 10 seconds. So I want to take that 10 seconds to tell you how much I appreciate you. I thank you for your support. And to remind listeners that we're here every Thursday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve all together now the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. Hello.
Land we love.
Good night. And
Good night, Janine.
Yeah.
Bye.
Night. God bless.
And God bless
you.
Next time.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Make it a great one.